Have you ever wondered if you could break the cycle of limiting thoughts about who you are and who you could be? Have you ever wished you could embrace challenges, struggles, and setbacks as a source of growth? Welcome to Amped, where we'll supercharge your success with high performance and mindset coach, Dr. Aaron. You'll learn the strategies, skills, tools, and techniques to make a living doing what you love. We'll discuss scientifically backed strategies to improve your mindset and ultimately your bottom line. It's time, your time, to step into greatness. Get ready to get amped. Here's Dr. Aaron.
Welcome to the Amped Podcast. This is Dr. Aaron, your host, and we are going to be talking about something today that is so, so special and inspiring and something that we can all learn from, and that is how to amp up your joy and your faith and your life in the face of suffering, diagnoses of terminal cancer, and we are going to be talking about that. So I am so excited to introduce you, amazing woman who lives here in Reno, where I live. Her name is Angie Brown, and you are going to be so blessed by our interview today. But let me tell you a little bit about Angie. Angie is a wife to amazing husband, Corey, and they have three young children, Dalton, who's 12, Gracie, who's 10, and Wyatt, who's 8. And Angie was diagnosed with metastatic breast cancer in June of 2013. Since that date, she's had 19 surgeries, 4 years of chemotherapy, radiation, and major procedures performed on life-dependent organs. She has been told clinically that she has less than a 12-month prognosis on several occasions, I believe. And she has had a unique relationship with cancer, and I'm really excited to share that and have her share that with all of us. So welcome, welcome, Angie.
Good morning. Thank you, Aaron, for having me.
Oh my gosh, thank you for saying yes. Are you kidding me? Okay, can I just dive in with, tell me a little bit about this relationship you've had with cancer. Can we start there?
Of course. So I was diagnosed with invasive ductal carcinoma back in June of 2013. And with that diagnosis, it's one of the most common forms of breast cancer. And I was originally told that after 4 short rounds of chemotherapy and some maintenance medications to look forward to, it was curable, it was treatable, it was something that we were going to just wrap our hands around. And I had a great cancer team, and life was going to move on through this. We were going to get through it. I kind of saw it as just a little hiccup in life. I was 36 years old, so young, and I had just been divorced actually 2 weeks earlier. So it was a rough summer, but I just felt like, you know, I've always felt like, okay, we got this. And then in 2015, a couple of years later, that cancer metastasized. I unfortunately was catapulted into this crazy world of cancer with talks of mortality, and the cancer had spread aggressively into several different organs by that time when I least expected it. But I still felt like I always had this peace with it. I accepted it as an assignment for me, even with some of these 2 to 4 year standard prognoses that I was getting. I just tried to redefine it. I approached it differently. I took it as something that we were through, and I still feel this great peace with it, as crazy as that sounds to say.
I think so many would look at you and say, where is this hope that you find? And where is this peace? And I'm going through a struggle myself, they might say to themselves, and how the heck do I do that? And so what's your best answer for that, Angie?
My answer for that is to feed hope. I feel like hope is something that has to be cultivated. It's something that has to be fed. And that focus for me has been on gratitude. I feel like with a diagnosis like mine, there's so much to do and time is against you. And so when that's the case, you just see time differently. And so I live in a world of completing each day, living my dreams each day. Some of us look forward to maybe a 5-year plan in life and in a career. And when you have a diagnosis like this that you face every day, I just have to finish every day to a place of done. I feel like when you're done with something, when you complete a task, it's just a restful place to stay. And so for me, I live my dreams every day. Sometimes that's taking my kid to a late night ice cream run, even in the snow. I write letters to my kid. It's therapeutic and healing for me to do that. I excel at something every day, whether that's concentrating more on my nutrition or taking a walk. And always I do take the time to spend one-on-one time with each of my kids every day, making a reservation every day, whether that's just lunch with a friend or just always having something on the calendar to look forward to. And most importantly for me, it's been a very sacred journey with my faith and leaning into Jesus and just living like God has provisions over our lives. And I believe that with my whole heart, and in everything that we need to finish, I feel like that will be complete at the end of every day.
Oh, thank you for that. You know, you have really found, I know, also some great joy and healing and focus in helping others. Can you talk about how helping others in the cancer community, as well as those of us who aren't in that community struggling with cancer, how that's helped you in your journey and how those people feed you with hope as well?
I feel like the relationships that we make and the memories we made, fulfilling spiritual needs, are all something that have been center stage in my journey with this disease. For me, one of the biggest things have been helping someone else find their faith and find their hope. I feel like for me, that's truly been a place where I've been able to have my faith and hope grow. It's amazing what happens when you sit with someone at their bedside and you can share a testimony with them and can share an experience with them. You know, I feel like my story was given to me. It's just up for me to share it. And I feel like everybody has a story with merit and a story that's helpful. And to take those relationships to new levels has just been completely wonderful for me. Just to be able to, it's a hard thing to explain. Oftentimes when you cross a threshold of metastasis, which is stage 4 cancer, people just don't know what to say. And it's hard to explain that sometimes not okay is okay. And so for me, especially in the cancer community and shining light on metastasis instead of just following the grim relationship that there is between cancer and dying, just to be there for somebody, just to sit there and to listen to them is oftentimes enough. I feel like some of the metastatic sisters that I kind of hang around with, we just want to be able to say sometimes, I'm not okay. And when somebody shares that vulnerability with you, to just have somebody validate that and say, I know you're not. It just really goes a long way. And also with cancer, people don't understand how you can help them. Sometimes it's really difficult to ask for help or to delegate things. And just if there's anything I could share, the specifics is what is kind of a big deal. Maybe not just a generalization of how can I help you, but I'm going to help you by this way. I'm going to take your keys away because I know you've taken 17 different pills today, or I know you're not feeling well. I'm coming over and I'm going to do laundry. Just specific things like that are so helpful in just the daily grid.
Oh, I love it. You said something, and I wrote it down as a quote because it just impacted me so much. You said, "I have found just being there for someone or helping someone find their faith exponentially grows your own." I love that, Angie.
I believe that wholeheartedly. I've seen it. I've lived it. It really has. It's made a monumental shift in my accepting this. Just to see the ache in others. You know, we all have it. We all battle something, and I have a great faith in my own faith. Leaning into Jesus has been a huge part of this for me, and just the faith in stories of victory, and stories of survival, and stories of miracles, and stories of just hardship sometimes. You know, we all have them, and it's that faithfulness to hear that is just good, good medicine.
Wow. You know, have you ever, this is a really personal question, but have you ever struggled with anger in this? Or if not, have other people in your life struggled with that experience, which is a really normal feeling in terms of grief and the grief process?
Dr. Erin, I have cried. I have screamed. I have hit pillows. It's all human. It's all part of this. I cry. I cry every day. Crying is cleansing for me. Sometimes it's not about, you know, I talk about finding joy in this diagnosis. At the end of the day, there's definitely defeat. There's definitely hurt. There's definitely a whole lot of this that is just hard and ugly stuff. But the crying is cleansing for me. It's hard on so many layers. You know, I have three little kids, and I'm in a split custody situation with my children's father, and there's a lot of layers to this, and it's true that cancer doesn't affect just the patient. Sometimes I feel like cancer is harder for the caregiver, and they have so many layers of this to go through on their own, but it definitely affects the generations. It affects husbands. It affects kids. It affects financially. It affects families and generations, and there definitely is elements to the behind the scenes. I'm human. I get it. But at the end of the day, you know, I just have to look forward to tomorrow. And I feel like when you can process through those feelings and you can let it out and you can scream and shout, you reduce a space with cancer and the diagnosis where there's space to fill with hope for the next day. And I feel like the more that it can get out, even when it's healing and even when it's writing or calling somebody, I have a person who is the person who I can call and just talk to about even death and dying. And, you know, it's a soul keeper. It's somebody who doesn't always want to put a Band-Aid on it and say, it's going to get better. And that life coach or that counselor or that friend, I feel like is an integral part of a team, of a cancer team, even emotionally.
Oh my goodness. That's beautiful. You know, one of the things you just mentioned, you know, spending time with your children individually each day, you've also been traveling to some beautiful places. Can you tell me a little bit about how that comes about in your family and the joy that you've experienced with those excursions?
I can. I have been in some places during my diagnosis where I have had such real conviction that I was in the wrong place at the wrong time. And that has taken me to places all over the globe, searching for healers. Some of those things have come with just meeting someone on a street or this grand network of people that have followed my story. And I truly believe that I have found healers just in the common world, not just in a physician or just in modern medicine. I have done a couple of years of alternative medicine, and just meeting these people and the uniqueness of their stories and telling them when the time is right, I have felt that God gives us people and places to figure these things out. And I feel a responsibility in me to do the research and to find the ways that I can listen to my intuition and listen to my body and know that cancer is not always a one-size-fits-all standard of protocol treatment. And so that has taken me to, I saw a Chinese medicine woman in San Francisco who taught me all about Chinese herbs and healing and acupuncture and acupressure and different modalities of cancer treatment that brought comfort to my side effects that I already had experienced through modern medicine. I have been to 10 or 12 academic research hospitals, always trying to stay on top of the clinical trials that are available. They have come so far in medicine. And then I'm getting ready to go to Alaska to see even an Alaskan medicine man who was ordained just by his tribe to do a different type of ozone healing. And I have found great comfort in their expertise and in just living it, finding a second, third, and fourth opinion. I am actually on my seventh oncologist just because I feel like that fit has to be perfect. That fit has to be right when you're talking about your life. And it's the patient relationship and bedside manner that's huge. And that doesn't always come in a traditional hospital. Sometimes that's spiritually. Sometimes that's in each of these avenues all over the world that I have found a treatment just from desperately doing research that has brought me huge comfort, even to do in parallel with some of the modern medicine out there.
Beautiful. You said something that just struck me to my core, and you said some of your joy comes in planning your funeral. Can you explain what you mean by that? And teach us. That's the craziest thing. I just, it was so profound. Please share.
Yeah. People say to me sometimes, when you can share your story without crying, you've healed. And maybe there's a bit to that, to this, but I am at a place where I can talk about it with a smile on my face. I can talk about it. I've actually found myself in situations with even doctors about faith and ethics and the end of life issues that come. Like you said in my introduction, I have had a couple of different prognosis letters that have been very grave. I'm actually at a point now where they look at me and tell me, you know, you're staring down the barrel of a shotgun with your clinical diagnosis, but you're grossly too normal to be here. Your blood is good. Your vitals are good. Your color's good. And it's something that I take great peace in, because I do feel well more days than not. But some of this, it's interesting to me that part of healing can be planning for your future. And one of the blessings that I do find in this is that I can be prepared for if that day comes or when that day comes. I think about the people who are just here today and gone tomorrow, and maybe that was on the to-do list. But for me to be able to prepare for how I want to be remembered, or to prepare for taking care of some of the things that I don't want my family to have to deal with if I were to pass, those things have been actually special for me to be able to get ready for. And I think we're all better prepared when we're prepared for something, whether that's a test or whether that's preparing for a big speech or something. And I think that's important to show to my children also. People say to me sometimes, you know, how do you talk age appropriately about this with an 8-year-old? And it took me some time to get to this place where I can talk openly about it to my children, but they love it now. We have a journal that we share when things get tough and ugly and they want to ask me something that they don't want to talk about because it's too emotional, but they want to know an answer to. That's how they communicate with me. And, you know, just wanting to leave the world a better place. I can surround myself with a tribe that lifts me up. I can surround myself with people who know what's important to me. And it's also a way of kind of staying in control until the very last breath, to be able to plan for something like that and know you're living the way or remembered in a way that you really want to be left as a legacy to your family or to the world.
Yeah, there's something in the high performance world called mortality motivation. And it's so interesting because it's usually how I start when I work with my business coaching clients. And there is power in asking yourself, what questions would I ask myself at the end of my life to know that I'm living the way I want to be living today? And that it's difficult to know exactly how do I live on purpose today if I'm not thinking ahead of that. And so it can seem really kind of grave and morbid, but it's really convicting. And so I just take great motivation in and just asking people to live full out. I mean, I think that's, you're such a model of that for me. And we do not need a diagnosis in order to live the way that you're living. And there's just so much we can learn from that and from how you're living, Angie. You know, you say live life, not a diagnosis.
I completely believe that. I feel like you can get so down, you know, a diagnosis like this just limits life. It puts a chokehold, a full, I don't know, shackles to grave and to just grim, and it would be easy to get caught up in that. But you're right. I do live that. At the end of the day, I always think to myself when I hit the pillow at night, did I do enough today? Did I do enough that if tomorrow's the day, I'll be happy? And I am. It is that way. And when you do have a diagnosis and you live stuck in the diagnosis, you know, a little bit of you dies every day. You can't live with cancer and die every day. I much prefer the opposite. So
wow.
I agree with you 100%.
Oh, it's beautiful. You know, I did a Facebook Live a couple weeks ago, and it was the number one thing I would do to grow your business and change things in 2019. It was to write a book. And you're like, I guess I'll write a book. I mean, I just love how you think and sign up for life. And one of the philosophies that you've shared with me is that grace has been interwoven in your life. Can you talk a little bit about that as we're wrapping up and what grace has meant to you in this experience?
I can. I really am able to find grace in everything, even this diagnosis. And when I share that with people, you know, I sometimes just marvel, I guess is a word, that comes out of my mouth even. On some days, you know, sick in a hospital bed, I'm still telling myself and telling others, I have had a richer life with this diagnosis in the last 5 years than not. And that's been in the people I've met and the relationships I've had and the expressions of love and just giving and generosity that have come to my family that I'm just speechless about. I was proposed to with a terminal diagnosis to a man who's like, you know, we're going to live today and we're going to just do this. You know, we're all not promised tomorrow. And so why do you think like that? And I just have just been able to expand on that in just all the relationships I've made and this interwoven network of the journey and the life and the healers and everything that I have come about has just, it's been something that my life has depended on. And so to share that with others, going back to that, to share your faith and yours grows exponentially. It's just what it is. And it just fuels me to keep going. And one of the meaningful ways that I've been able to do that also is to soak myself up in service. I volunteer. I'm a coordinator actually for a charity called Little Pink Houses of Hope. And they have a chapter here in Tahoe City. It's a nonprofit for breast cancer patients and their families. And it's one of the ways that I've been able to kind of help the next one in line and to reach out to them and just be able to share the whole experience, all the layers of it, the good, bad, and ugly, and to just be there.
Mm. Well, you know, you and I haven't known each other for very long, but I want to tell you that you pour into me and I pour into you. And it's just a beautiful thing. You know, you came to my one of my one day live events and you had to leave at noon because you had to go and get some bad, what turned out to be bad news.
Yeah.
Right. A body scan. And you were quick to reach out to me afterwards and say how much I inspired you. And I received that, Angie, you know, I received that fully. And I'm so glad that you cry because every time I, you know, get a letter from you, I cry, but it does feel good. I'm so glad you say that, like, they're, what did you say? Your tears are...
They're cleansing. They are.
Right? They just, like, I they feel happy and joyful and sad, and it just makes me feel like, yeah, of course I'm crying. I'm alive, and I'm having some feelings, and... So thank you for pouring into me and allowing me to pour into you and be a beacon of hope for this this awful, awful thing, which is cancer. But you know what? You say cancer is the worst way to meet the best people.
Yeah,
I just love that.
It's a quote that my mom continues to remind me of. I'm not sure in that I can't take credit for it, but it is so true in my life. You know, just focusing on all of that stuff that matters at the end of the day and all of these relationships, my house might be messy. I might cry and have moments of just, you know, why? And I'm not supposed to know why is the thing. And to question that, I just have to get through it by, you know, focusing on what matters the most. And to me, that's my faith and my kids and my relationships and love. And that's enough for me.
Okay, let's wrap up with any last words of just advice for us, how to fully live a day of completion. I love that you say that. I like to live my life each day in completion.
Last minute words, just do that. Just be present with Little Pink Houses of Hope. One of the tagline slogans that we focus on is just to be ridiculously present every day. It's live stronger, laugh harder, love deeper. And all of those things are the core of me. With this, with being I don't know the word. I'm just, you know, I'm in it like so many others, and so many others have it worse than me. And just to keep those things to the core and just appreciate every day, even the little things, you know, my house might be messy, but I have a home. It's just, I just encourage everybody to just try to keep that in the forefront of your mind and to be mindful to just that in everything you do.
Well, I second that challenge to our listeners to live with an attitude of gratitude, to learn how to live what is called a fully engaged life, where you are feeling your day and you're feeling your life. You know, we have so much psychological research that says, you know, you cannot heal what you're not willing to feel. And you're such an example of that, of leaning into to the good, the bad, and the ugly actually brings joy and contentment and humanity back to your day. And really, at the end of the day, we want to feel our day. We want to live with intention. And you have reminded of us to do that, my friend. Thank you for blessing us with your journey, with your words of wisdom, with your vulnerability, authenticity, grace, with your hope. I love you. Thank you so much, Angie.
Thank you, Dr. Erin.
You are so welcome. Thank you for joining us on this incredible Amped podcast. Remember, the Amped life is your best life. It's where you're activated, motivated, productive, energized, and disciplined. And just know it's time. It's your time to step into your greatness. Thank you so much for joining us. See you next time.
Now that you've been given the permission and tools to amplify your life, it's time to amplify your purpose, passion, and profits. For more tools on how to make money doing what you love, visit www.thepsychologyofmission.com. And for more episodes, visit the Tenacious Living Network at trlstation.com. It's time, your time, to step into your greatness and get amped.